Welcome to Corittles. This week, high D's, working from home, downfall. The questions this cast answers are, what are high D's likely to forget when working from home? What should high D's do to make working from home more effective? And how can high D's make working from home easier?
Folks, surely you've heard by now that we've upgraded the value of our license. It's got more value than ever now. For the same price, $200 annually, you not only get all of our show notes, Mandatory Tools and Career Tools, the entire archive available for you during the entire time of your license, but you also get our interviewing series, you get First Job Fundamentals, you get Resume Workbook, in case you need to tune up your resume, but perhaps most importantly of all, you get access to Executive Tools, our brand new bi-weekly podcast, where we explore what it means and how to become an effective executive, and the show notes that go with it. So if you were ever thinking, gee, I'm not sure there's enough value in a license, it's not going to get any better than this. We've already gotten hundreds of new licensees signing up because of their desire to hear about executive tools. Because as I've been saying to people lately, do you think they're going to teach you how to be an executive once they make you one? I don't think so. I hope you come to the website and sign up.
Sarah, remote working is likely to continue through 2021 and 2022, whether it's full-time or part-time or in lots of different combinations. People are talking about possibilities. And sometimes that's through our own preferences that we've decided we'll have a new job. And next time we definitely want to work from home, having had the experience. Some of it is economic. So it's a lot cheaper for companies to have people working from home and not have a building. And some of it may be future crises like COVID, and some people have talked about the variants coming back and, you know, other reasons. But now we've proved that remote working can work. It's going to be, you know, one of the range of normal choices around where we work. And if we know that, which we do, we should try and get good at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that means to some extent, not only getting good at some of the technology and self-management and the things that requires, but also avoiding the traps that our behavioral preferences can lead us into. And so in this cast, we're going to talk to the high Ds, but if you're not a high D, you will still get benefit from this if you listen, because A, some of the behavioral preferences kind of carry over to some of the other styles. And also it's good to know if you're working with a high D, what's going on in their brain, what they're likely to be missing, and how you can, A, make your relationship with them better, and B, maybe fill in for them on the things that they find more difficult. And we'll have future guidance about how to work with a high D when you're working from home, but in this one, you'll be able to sort of do the opposite or get from between the lines how to work with a high D. So if you're not a high D, keep listening. There's still stuff for you in here.
Exactly. Okay, so today's outline, we're going to start our conversation by outlining what a high D is, what does that mean, followed by the need to collaborate and the high D's need to communicate. So let's start our conversation by defining, for those who may not realize or understand, what a high D is. Now, guys, a high D is one of the four DISC profiles. DISC being a self-administered behavioral assessment that measures how assertive or reserved you are and how task-focused or people-focused you are. In terms of DISC, it's got a long history of significant validity. It's one of the reasons that we at Manager Tools teach and work with DISC and talk about it quite often. So I'm going to lay down the groundwork of this. The four profiles are as follows. D, which we're talking about today, D stands for dominance. It's the tendency to exert power and assertiveness. Then there's the I, which stands for influence. I's have the tendency to assert themselves socially and interpersonally. S's, which stands for steadiness, have the tendency to engage in reserved and thoughtful behavior. And then C, which stands for conscientiousness, has the tendency to be reserved and analytical.
Well, we're going to do a short description here, Caricature?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not even right, I don't think. But we're going to just do a short description and some examples for you. But there are, I want to say 1,000. There aren't 1,000. But there are a lot of, of podcasts on the website about DISC, about how to work with it, about your style, about IDs in meetings and IDs in email and all sorts of, and what to do if you're two profiles and all sorts of things. So just go to the website, in the search bar type DISC, there'll be 100 that come up. So IDs, like Sarah and I are both IDs too. So so us IDs are seen as hard charging, take no prisoners type of people. We don't mind taking ownership. We don't mind making decisions. We don't mind moving fast and breaking things.
Yep.
We will achieve our goal no matter what the cost.
Yes.
And we get straight to the point. Our emails are often one word or one sentence because that's all that needs to be said. We are not patient and not good with details, but that's okay with us because we're achieving the goal. So who cares if the details are wrong? Mm-hmm. So other IDs are Gordon Ramsay, Simon Cowell, Margaret Thatcher, all English people, funnily enough. English people aren't IDs any more than any other country.
Yeah, I'm a Canadian. I'm one of them.
Yeah.
All right. I suppose next in line then is our high eyes. High eyes are the people on your team that could sell ice cream to a snowman. They're sociable. They have a friend in every department. They're that true, I'm going to say, social butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
Every meeting for them is improved if more of their friends are in the room. More of those people they love working with. Take care of the people and the work will do itself, is things that the eyes firmly believe. They're big picture idea people, strategy, not process. And they help the team see the future, but they don't want to manage the project or get into the weeds at all. High eyes love emails with jokes and witty sayings. And some examples then of high eyes are Steve Harvey, Bill Clinton, Will Smith, those charismatic people that you can think of.
Okay, so next we have S's. S's are the ones that take care of your team. They know everybody's family. They know their preferences. They know their mood. They remember where you've been on vacation for the last 3 years. They help the team slow down and ensure that everybody's point of view is heard and respected. High S emails always begin with asking how you are. And they actually genuinely want to know. If a high D writes, how are you? It's because they know you're a high S.
And it's obligatory.
They should write that, but they don't actually care.
Right.
Other high S's, Mother Teresa, Gandhi, Fred Rogers. A little bit slower, a little bit more caring.
Exactly. And then the last of the four profiles is our high C's. High C's are data analysts on your team. They're the individuals who are deep into the details, far down into the weeds. They help the team get things right and accurate, and they think of every permutation to possibly get there. High C's are calm, they're logical. Sometimes their ability to identify those potential failures is seen as pessimistic on your team. And all of their communications are slow, structured, and thoroughly accurate. Our examples then, or some examples of high C's would be Spock, Data, Sheldon from Big Bang Theory, Harrison Ford.
The high C's are the ones that we need that high D's don't like because they're slow and in the details and we're like fast and don't care about the details. Like,
exactly.
The picture, if my car got from A to B, how do I care whether or not I went over all the toll roads,
right?
And cost myself money? Yeah.
In a single sentence, I often think of them like, high D's are the bossiest person you know. High mm-hmm. I's are the funnest person you know.
Mm-hmm.
High S's are the sweetest person you know. Mm-hmm. And high C's are the smartest person you know.
That is a very good... That's a very good like way to remember. I like that.
Makes it easy.
Yeah.
Because today we're talking about high D specifically. We need to talk about their ability to, or lack thereof, collaborate.
And you and I, and all high Ds, think that working from home is great.
Because no one here to bother me.
Nobody asking me if I want a cup of tea. Nobody expecting me to make cups of tea for them. Nobody wants to go to lunch. I can be just efficient. I can get my to-do list and I will just start at the top and I will work down and I will get more done than anybody else, which is okay. It's good and you have to get things done. That's part of why you're at work.
Absolutely.
You know, you're getting paid to get things done. But there's another part of success at work, which is relationships. And much as you don't like it, career success comes from results, getting things done, and relationships. There's no point in getting a whole bunch of stuff done if the people you do it for or with don't like you or don't think you're doing the right stuff or just don't want to work with you. You will soon find yourself out of a job, results or not. You can get away for a while just getting results, but then you'll find that other people are getting better projects than you, they're getting promoted, they're getting raises, and you're not. And you'll be confused because you'll be like, but I'm getting all this stuff done and they're just being nice to people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because there's a combination here. It's results and relationships. People have to want to work with you.
Exactly.
And if they don't want to work with you, what will happen is they won't, and you will not be able to get anything done. You know, if you need some information from someone else, they have to want to work with you in order for you to get that information. And if you don't get whatever it is you're supposed to be getting done because they didn't give it to you, you can only get away with that as an excuse for a couple of times before someone says to you, hey, that's your problem, that they don't want to give it to you. That's not their problem, that's yours.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We talk oftentimes in our Effective Communicator Conference, which we teach in person and virtually. We talk in the ECC about the fact that all of the behaviors people engage in have a perceived motivation and intent. As these, you can absolutely be at home and not answer the phone, ignore your Slack or email, and be completely unavailable. And no one on your team will realize that you're not actually busy with someone else. That is, they won't know what you're doing, but they'll just assume that you're ignoring them. You could be talking to other people. You could be in another meeting. You could be extremely busy and can't keep up. But the perception people get of your lack of communication is that you're purposely ignoring them. You're right in thinking that no one can see what you're actually doing. You're wrong in thinking that as long as you're plowing through your to-do list, no one will care or perceive, I want to say, malintent because of your lack of communication.
And you're wrong in thinking, and Sarah and I know this because we too are Heidis. Like I'm not telling, we're not saying you're wrong because we think we're any different.
Right.
Like, I wrote this, and I wrote it from my brain, and I know that all of this is true. So you think you can do it all.
You do.
I think I can do it all.
I know.
I do this all the time. Mark says, yeah, get someone else to do that. And I'm like, no, I've got it. I can do it. Yeah, no. And you're wrong in thinking it's effective and efficient for you to do it all. That's something else I think is, you know, like, oh, if I have to explain it, I might as well have done it. Or if I have to give it to someone else, they won't do it as well as I do. And it's just not true, even though, you know, you believe it, Toby.
Right.
You work in an organization for a reason. And the reason is the product of the organization is greater than the sum of the people within it. There are other people with skills in other areas that complement yours and mean that something is better for the both of you. We were talking about high C's being in all of the detail. It's irritating, I know, when somebody says, but what about this? And what about this? And in this case, what do we do? And you're just like, oh, couldn't you just extrapolate? Or just, you know, I don't know. Or just make something up. And that is the answer in your brain. But that all of those details do have to be addressed at some stage. And it's right. The high C that goes through and finds all of those issues and means that when you launch whatever it is you're launching, it doesn't break.
Exactly.
So even though, sure, it's more efficient for you to do the project because you're not going to address any of those details, so you get it done faster. But when it's implemented, it breaks because you didn't address any of the details. That's the benefit of an organization, that your skills and their skills combine make things better. And so you have to accept that. And that means working with other people. There's a famous essay called iPencil by Leonard E. Reed, which is kind of funny that reading and pencils go together. I never
noticed that until just this moment.
Just this moment. I'm like, did he make his name up? But just anyway. If you have never read it, you should.
It's really good.
Just Google iPencil. It's an essay by the pencil.
It's very short. Mm-hmm. It's very cute.
Yeah, it's like 2 pages or something. And it describes all the people who have a hand in making the pencil. And it says no one person could make a pencil as efficiently and cheaply as the entire supply chain can. The pencil says not only that, the pencil says, that's a sentence I never thought I'd say. Not even one person in the process even knows how to do the entire process from start to finish, let alone like how does that get coordinated? The person who logs the cedar trees, and pencils are apparently made of cedar trees, they only know how to log cedar trees. And the graphite miner only knows how to mine graphite. And the castor bean grower who makes the oil only knows how to grow castor beans. And yet they all come together to make a pencil.
Right.
You can no more replace your team or your organization than the cedar tree logger can. If you send the cedar tree logger to the graphite mine, he's just going to stand there and go, I don't know.
I don't do this. I don't know how to do this.
You need both. And so the urge to do it all yourself leads you down the wrong path.
It does. And it's false thinking that leads you to think that you can do it all. It's what leads to your downfall. When you can do it all, why would you communicate with anyone else? If, on the other hand, though, you think of yourself as the cedar tree logger, back to the analogy, if you think of yourself as not the entire process, but a part of a process, of course, if you're only one part of the process, you must communicate with people on either side of you for the turnover. Why? Because you would expect or hope for that same thing in return if somebody was giving you a portion of a project that they would give you that communication so that you could do your next steps. So it's a change of thinking. It's a don't think of yourself as the start to finish in the process. Think of yourself as a part of the process. And what this means then is when you're working from home, communicating with other people, it ought to be at least 50% more than you would communicate with other people if you were in the office.
Which is at least half of why I want to go back to working in an office.
I know, right? It's easier.
Not what we ever will at Manager Tools, but the fact that I have to communicate more because people can't see what I'm doing.
Right.
Is, you know, irritating.
Well, remember in the office, you could look over at one of your peers and be like, oh, that's not a good facial expression. What is happening over there? Hey, Wendy, what's going on? You need my help? Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. It's easier. You have so much more data. Mm-hmm. Here in a virtual world, people are struggling and no one else knows it. People need more communication and they don't ask for it. So communicate more.
So here's some practical things to communicate about.
Yeah.
The first one is don't just fix stuff. Now, it is often faster to just fix stuff than to go through whatever process there is for getting it fixed. So you may or may not have read the book called The Phoenix Project. There's a whole bunch of people who have. It's a wonderful book. It's a fictional book. It's one of those business fables about a DevOps team. And the lead developer, whose name is Brent, is pulled from pillar to post. He's being asked to fix every problem. You know, every moment something breaks, somebody says, oh, Brent knows how to fix that. And he's the only person who knows how to fix it. So he's being pulled and constantly in firefighting mode because people are saying, hey, you need to fix this. And then you need to fix this. And you need to fix this. But the problem is, he does the Band-Aid, which is what Heidi's do. We're like, oh, I'll just fix it quickly. And you fix it quickly. And that causes more problems because the system is integrated. There's when he fixes one thing, something else breaks. And so he's constantly creating work for himself by breaking things.
Exactly.
And in the long run, he's just causing more problems. And what they do in the book is they say, Brent can't work on anything.
Right.
And they stop him. Like, nobody's allowed to call him. And all of a sudden, he starts to work more strategically so that more things work and he stops breaking things. And it is not his fault, just to be clear, any more than it's your fault if somebody calls you and says, hey, I need you to fix it.
Exactly.
But when you do that, you often create another problem or you break something else.
Yeah, you're breaking it for somebody else. And that's unfortunate for sure.
One of the problems with just fixing stuff or one of the reasons we fall into that trap is because people call us and say, hey, can you just fix this? Or, hey, can you, do you know how to fix this? And because
we know,
you know, you're not a people person and you need better relationships, you're like, oh yeah, I'll fix that for you.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is you make it worse. So instead, we've got some alternatives for you. The first of which is I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. So before you do things, even if it's someone's called you to say, hey, can you fix this? Think about who else might be affected.
Exactly.
And send them a message or get them on Slack or whatever and say, hey, I'm thinking about adding a column to our tracking spreadsheet. Is that going to get in your way? And you will be surprised how many times people say yes.
Yeah, that would be totally problematic.
My formula relies on this thing being in column R. And if you put it an extra column and it's now in column S, then yeah, that's going to mess everything up. It's amazing to me how often other people's stuff relies on something particular being there and you moving it. One of the things we do is we use Dropbox for all our shared files. And I like Dropbox to be tidy and I'll go in and tidy it all up. But that breaks other people's systems who have links to files in particular places. And even though it's tidier after I've done it, I make someone else's life hard. So
exactly.
And then on the other hand, if your idea is brilliant, which, you know, 90% of the time it will be, you know, let's face it, you get credit twice because everybody knows you're going to do it and that it was your idea. And then you get credit when it's done and it's brilliant. So actually, I'm thinking is a really useful and credit-worthy thing to use.
Exactly. Additionally, or I should say as well as that, you could use pre-wiring, and pre-wiring being a step stronger than I'm thinking. Pre-wiring is talking to one or more people before a key meeting or a presentation, some place you're going to propose an idea potentially. Going over what you're going to say, what you're thinking about proposing potentially in the meeting, and then getting their feedback. Now, this could be because you want to get agreement in the meeting, and we know that it's more likely to happen if you can cover objections that they have during that presentation or potentially even in advance. It might just be because you have to give some negative, unimpressive news about their work in the meeting. And you want to make sure that they have a heads up. Hey, I know you're incomplete on this thing. Sorry, that's something I'm going to have to report in the call or whatever it may be. And you might want them to know so that they have a chance to maybe fix it before that meeting happens. Or it might just be because you're going to recommend something that will have an effect on their work. And you want them to have a chance to think about it so that they can come prepared to respond during the meeting itself. And I should say, when you say want to, we know you probably don't want to do those things, want to talk to them in advance, want to get their buy-in, etc. But doing so will get you a better outcome. So it's a matter of effectiveness over efficiency.
Folks, working from home is one thing, but you're going to go back to the office. Many of you are going to go back to the office. You're going to have to work with other people. And sometimes that's pretty hard. If you want to be more effective working with other people, a great way to learn how to do it is to attend one of our effective communication conferences. We'll teach you how to study and understand other people and make small changes in how you interact with them. The words you say, how you say them, your facial expressions, your body language, your work product that will make you more effective working with them. And we have a virtual effective communicator conference starting just a short time from now on July 19th. Come to the website, sign up and learn how to become a more effective professional.
Okay, next one is communicating tasks and status. And I know what your mantra is because it's mine too. I know what I'm supposed to be doing. Leave me alone and I'll get on with it. And the problem is that no one else knows what you think you should be doing. And they don't know when you're going to be done. And so they don't know if what they think you're doing is on your list. They don't know if you're prioritizing it the same way that they are. They don't know when you're going to be done and therefore when they can start their thing.
Uh-huh.
And so they're frustrated because they don't know what's going on, but also you might be doing work that isn't required.
Right.
I was listening to a podcast yesterday, and the person was talking about a university person who was asked to record lectures for a lecturer. And her instinct was to say, yes, and we need intros, and we need a recording person, and we need B-roll, and we need this, and we need that. And then when she actually said to the person, so what am I doing this for? The person was like, oh, there's a student who's going to miss a couple of sessions. It's one student. Right. And so they decided that another student in the class could record it on their iPhone. And she didn't even need to do any work. That's the kind of thing that, you know, we go off on one when we hear something like that. We're like, okay, it's all this work, but that's okay because I can fit that in. I can make that happen. Yeah. But it's a waste of time if it's not actually what people want. Or if you're doing it and somebody else is doing it at the same time, or you're doing something that's counterproductive to what they're doing. And this all gets solved by communication.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that lack of communication is either going to result in wasted work or frustrated coworkers, neither of which is conducive to your success. Now, all that said, if there's not a formal system for reporting tasks and status, right? If there's no formal communication mechanism for what you're wanting to regularly update on, we'd suggest you create one of your own. It doesn't need to be complicated. I mean, for example, email bulletins. You could send out email bulletins. Those are probably just fine. Send one out every day, and you're going to be surprised at how much more quiet time, lack of other people needing to follow up on where you are and what you're doing, that you will receive as an outcome of actively going ahead and communicating before being asked to do so.
It's amazing, that trick. Every time I've used it, I've been amazed at the difference it makes and how differently people perceive me, how much more professional people think you are, because you send them an email and say, hey, I haven't heard from this person. I'm going to follow up tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, it's no news, like, because I haven't heard from them. It's obvious that I would follow up. Why would I need to tell people? But honestly, you send that one line email and people are shocked. It's amazing how effective it is.
Right. Now, that said, don't resort, guys, to email when you could be communicating in other potentially more effective ways. Now, email is efficient. It's just not necessarily effective. In the book, The Organization and Architecture of Innovation, Managing Flow of Technology, Thomas Allen, now he's the Allen of the Allen curve that talks about proximity and communication, divides communication into three types. That is for information, for coordination, and for inspiration. Communication for information can happen asynchronously by email or by status, by notes in an electronic system, something like that. Communication for coordination can happen by email as well, but is more effectively done synchronously. So by phone or in meetings. Communication for inspiration needs employees to be up to date on developments in their specialism and opportunities to bump into each other to exchange that information in order to then create more knowledge. This is best done in person, but could be an aside or on a phone call, something verbal, a conversation. So using this classification for communications could help decide on whether email is truly the best communication for the instance, or is it a type of instance that would be better done verbally, right? Would be better if a meeting were called for discussion, etc.
You know, it's amazing. Communication for coordination, you know, when you're trying to set up a meeting, it's often better to have a 2-minute conversation where you can both look at your calendars than the back and forth of like, oh, is Tuesday at 3? No. No. How about Thursday at 7? No, can't do that. You know, that's frustrating. So it's often better just to have a 2-minute conversation.
You know, often something that I do, it's just the thing I've developed over time, is if I'm writing what I think when I sit down at my computer is a relatively simple email, and I find myself rewording that email multiple times.
It's like better upon, as a phone call.
Yeah, it's better over the phone. If I'm like finding myself like rewording it and like rereading and being like, no, that's not quite right. It's a signal to my brain, my high D not people-focused, very task-focused brain, to be in that situation where I'm like, oh, this felt easy, this felt simplistic, but it's actually something that probably requires conversation. So keep that in mind. If you find yourself thinking, this is easy, I'll just shoot a note, and that note feels difficult to write, you might have chosen the wrong method of communication.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, and if you've got a Slack message that goes backwards and forwards like two or three times, that's probably not good on Slack.
Right.
You know, that's a really good trick. I like that. That said, don't forget about communication for relationships. You know, that those frustrating stories about what somebody else did at their for their weekend or the dream they had last night, that's other people trying to build a relationship with you. So don't cut that time off. Don't say, oh, I'm going to be efficient and therefore I'm not going to talk about my weekend or your weekend or whoever's. Be early to video calls so that you have some time to chat. If you need a reminder, write it at the top of the agenda for the meeting or put it on a post-it. Or if you're writing a list for a meeting that you're going to have like a one-on-one, just write it at the top of the page. How was your weekend?
Right.
You know, like we're going to tell other styles similar tricks, you know, write stuff down or it doesn't matter that you need help with this as long as you're helping yourself. It's worse to say, hey, I'm just going to be bad at relationships and when there's an easy trick to help yourself and you're denying it. That's just silly. So if you need to write down at the top of the page, at top of an agenda, hey, ask about everybody's weekends, then write it down. And if it makes you a better team member, that's a good thing, not a bad thing.
Right. Something silly that I do is I will pre-type my Slack sometimes. Don't tell anybody in Manager Tools this. I will, for example, over the weekend, this past weekend, Cassie's sister had a baby. And she had sent out a picture of her holding the baby, and it was this great thing. And I happened to be at my Slack, on my computer. I was reading it, and I saw that picture. And I know me. Monday morning, I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to need something from Cassie. And the first thing I'm going to write is, hey, where are we on at X, Y, and Z? Mm-hmm. But there's just a baby. So I wrote, but did not send a Slack message directly to Cassie that said, how was the weekend? How's the baby? And I left it there, unsent, so that Monday, when I sat down at my computer and I thought to myself, oh my goodness, I need X, Y, and Z. I need to know the status on this. That email or that Slack was already queued up. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah, baby. So I hit send.
That's genius.
Isn't that weird though? I mean, I feel like a bit of a robot now that I say that out loud, but it's a thing that I do.
I think it's, you know, it's the things that you're likely to forget. And for you, forgetting to do something is unlikely. You know, you have your to-do list, you don't forget tasks, but you do forget
you,
not you personally, but Heidi's in general, forget to say things like thank you and please and how was your weekend and how is your baby or your nephew in this case. And so all we're doing is putting a process in there to help ourselves.
Exactly.
You know, it's like having an alarm clock. You could rely on your brain to wake you up every day at the same time, or you can have an alarm clock. Nobody says having an alarm clock is a bad thing. Right?
Exactly.
It's the same thing.
Right. You're right. And we tell high eyes, for example, those people that I want to say lack formal organization methods. we tell them to write things down so that they don't get distracted and they don't forget to do those activities. To your point, I would never forget to do an activity. I just forget to be a person. Mm-hmm. So you're right. There's nothing wrong with writing things down to help you overcome your weaknesses, even when they're not task weaknesses, even when they are people weaknesses.
Now, to be clear, no DISC profile is better than the other. It is not better to be a high D than a high I or an S or a C. The Cs are not better because they're detail-oriented. None of them are better. We need all of them. It's not a test. There is no pass or fail. There's no right answer. It's just a behavioral instrument designed to help you understand your behaviors. And once you understand and you can see them from the outside perspective, you can then do things to make yourself more effective.
Exactly. Like
it's one thing to understand, and it's another thing to understand and do something about it.
Right.
And it's incredibly useful to know what your weaknesses are so that you can help yourself and prevent yourself from falling into holes. And in this case, that's increasing collaboration and increasing communication.
You bet.
Super easy.
It is.
As if it were.
I know, right?
It's as somebody said, it's simple,
right?
But not easy.
Yes, exactly. That is a good point. We do know that.
Awesome. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic.
Bye, guys.